Welcome back to episode 17. I'm Ashley, and there's no Curtis today because he's working like crazy this week. And this is Partners in Crime. So this is kind of a different episode because it's just me. So I even prepared conspiracy theories to be read at the end, which Curtis would be so proud because the conspiracy theories are definitely not my strong suit of the podcast. So you'll have to bear with me if they're not as good. Sorry, Curtis, in advance, but we can't let them down the second week that we're recording. So if you're listening, Curtis, I hope that you are, I hope you're impressed. So I guess we're just going to jump right into it today. Christina Ann Thompson Harris is who we are going to be covering today. Christina was born on January 16th, 1978. In Flint, Michigan, to parents Harvey Thompson and Kathy Hopper, who later becomes Kathy Mays when she marries Christina's stepdad, James Mays. I looked on a few sources, but there isn't a lot of research material on her early life or up to meeting and marrying her husband. Christina marries Jason Harris on August 16, 2003. Christina was a member of St. John's, the Evangelist Catholic Church, and she enjoyed crafting, scrapbooking, and swimming, and spent a lot of time with her children. Christina was also a huge Detroit Tigers fan, which we live in Michigan, so going to Tigers games and Lions games is kind of like a big thing. It's kind of just like a whole day event whenever we go. It's fun. So I can resonate with that. She liked watching them play. She also enjoyed the Red Wings, which is the hockey team for Michigan, if you didn't know that, which I'm sure most of you did. Christina, who some called Chrissy, was the mother of two children and the stepmother of two children that Jason had prior to their marriage. One of her stepkids had a child, making her also a grandmother as well. She was a young 36 years old and a grandma. Which my mom was a grandma at 32, so shout out to my mom. And shout out to teen pregnancy, I guess. Don't do that. Christina also had a few sisters. On September 29th, 2014, Jason Harris went to work. Jason is her husband. Christina, who has a medical history of having asthma, hadn't slept well the night before, Jason claims. At this time, Christina had been suffering from a cold. However, Christy's mom denies this, saying that she had been around her daughter and her daughter was in good spirits leading up to the 29th. So all of like straight out of the gate, like there's already conflicting information, like the mom saying she was fine, the husband saying that she was sick. And I mean, she has asthma. I'm not really sure if asthma can make you feel like I'm not really sure about how asthma can make a person feel. I know it has like to do with their breathing and stuff. So I can understand that would be hard to sleep at night, more so during the day. I know that when I have like a cold or something, which I know isn't the same as asthma, but it's harder at night than it is during the day to deal with a cold. So the night before, Jason claims that he had made her a bowl of cereal and that she had a really hard time eating it. He told his neighbor and authorities that she was eating the cereal and dropped the spoon on the floor and passed out, which I'm sorry, but if she has asthma and she passes out, that's going to make me think that she's not breathing properly and she might need like medical intervention. But that's just me. According to Jason, she was still asleep in bed when he left for work that morning, like the next morning. Jason called his neighbor and explained that the night before and asked the neighbor, Jason left for work that morning and he called his neighbor and explained what had happened the night before. He asked his neighbor if he would go check on his wife, Christina. This was odd for the neighbor, but he relented. And when he walked into the Harris's home that was unlocked, mind you, he found Christina lying unresponsive in bed. The neighbor was unsure of what she was seeing. She called another neighbor in, and this one was a nurse who confirmed that Christina was in fact deceased. This 36-year-old mother of four, a wife, daughter, sister, friend, was dead out of nowhere, her youngest being just 8 months old. So, of course, this begs the question, what happened to Christina? After an autopsy reveals high levels of narcotics in her system, Christina's death is ruled as an accidental overdose, which leaves her family with even more questions because in all accounts, Christina had never been a drug user to anyone's knowledge. Now, I know a lot of people who have been addicted to drugs, and unless you really know that person, like even knowing them, you sometimes really don't know. So I can see how this could come as a shock to somebody. If this was the case, then she was just really good at hiding it. I'm really not sure. But her family was pretty convinced, though, that she was not a drug user. And as her mom, like being close with her and stuff like that, I feel like she would know. But sometimes you never know. But this was a murder. So I think you guys can all kind of collectively understand that it wasn't an accidental drug overdose. So police insist that sometimes these things can be kept hidden and the family would not hear it. They just wouldn't have it. They just fought for her. They advocated for her because they knew how she really was as a mother and as a person in general. Honestly, she just wasn't a drug user. Jason, who would be assumed as a grieving widow, was just the opposite. He ended visits with his kids and Christy's family, which is adding really insult to injury. They're like, they lose their daughter and now they can't even see their grandchildren anymore. Because of the death had been ruled an accidental overdose, police give Jason instant access to his home. There was no investigation to be held there. So meaning any evidence that she was murdered or foul play, it's just going to be trampled over at this point. He can hide things. He can get rid of things. He can cover things up at this point. So that's kind of something too, that if police, I know in like a lot of other cases, if police feel like it's a suicide type of case, they aren't as careful as if it was a homicide, as they should be. And that's not in every case, but I have heard that a lot. So if this wasn't an accident, police at this point have lost time and evidence, potentially. Jason wasted no time, however, at all moving on, right along with his life. 9 days after Christina passed away, he began dating another woman, openly. He flew to Rhode Island for a vacation to visit with his new girlfriend, 9 days after his wife's sudden death. This didn't last, though. Because when he got back to Michigan, he moved yet another woman into the house that he shared with his wife and children just weeks prior to this. Around a month after Christina's death, Jason was fired from his job due to testing positive for drugs. Hello, that is a red flag. And cashed in on Christina's $120,000 life insurance check. It is clear, even prior to Christy's death, that Jason had been seeing other women and their marriage was on the rocks. According to Jason's former co-workers, Jason openly talked about lacing his wife's food and drinks with Xanax that he would buy off of a guy at work to knock his wife out for hours at a time. Christina had been known to spit her drinks out for them tasting funny. It's a wonder how long this was truly going on for. In August 2014, just a month before she passed, he actually tried to pay a coworker $5,000 to take his wife out. Like, that's really, like, if you're going to be a hit person, I feel like the bar is much higher than just a mere $5,000. I don't really feel like that's even, like, a realistic, like, not that, like, there's a price on somebody's life, but, like, that, I mean, like, that's just, it's just not worth it. Like, you're going to go to prison for the rest of your life if you're caught. $5,000 is nothing. And plus, it's just, like, sickening. Like, who would actually take $5,000 to kill somebody? Jason's sister even claims that he had made comments about getting rid of Christina. And I think that his family and friends coming out with these things, really speaks on his character. And I know that not every marriage works out, but I feel like he had another option other than hurting his wife, or obviously worse. But we're still stuck with the autopsy results that she died from a lethal overdose. But how is someone who doesn't do drugs overdosing? So we go back to September 28th, 2014. Christy was falling asleep while pumping milk for her 8-month-old baby. She told Jason that she was hungry, and he made her up a bowl of cereal. He mixed in a lethal dose of heroin into the cereal and milk, which led directly to Christy's murder. Not accidental overdose. They came to this conclusion 5 years after Christy's death. This family fought for 5 years to have it changed from an accidental overdose to a homicide, because they knew their daughter was not a drug user. I mean, she was breastfeeding her baby. And not to say that people don't abuse drugs while they breastfeed. I know that happens, but this was just genuinely out of character for Christina. Because of her family's persistence in reopening an investigation, the family had even saved frozen breast milk. For the first time ever, breast milk was entered into a criminal court case as evidence. They tested the milk, and there was absolutely no trace of any drugs in the milk samples, proving that Christy was not a drug user in August of 2019. So it took from 2014, literally almost exactly 5 years later, they found out that there was no drugs in her milk that she was feeding to her baby, meaning that she wasn't an active drug user. So this wasn't an accidental overdose. Due to this new lead, they were able to come up with a motive that Jason was in a financial cramp. He was seeing another woman. He couldn't stand the thought of child support, so he took things into his own hands by taking the life of his wife and mother of his children. Christina's death, now ruled a homicide, made Jason suspect number one. He was arrested shortly after this discovery. Jason was disappointed by the change of cause of death by the coroner, but Christy's family hoped justice for Christy would finally be served. On November 17, 2021, Jason Harris of Davison, Michigan, was found guilty of first-degree premeditated murder, solicitation of murder, and delivery of a controlled substance causing death. And on December 10th, 2021, he was given a life sentence without the possibility of parole. Nearly 10% of all murders committed in our country is spouse killing spouse, which is heartbreaking. Christy's sisters, Katrina Sharon and Patricia Hutchinson, diligence and persistence in solving this murder of their sister is what led to getting Jason behind bars for life. The family has a GoFundMe set up for legal fees and custody fees if anybody would want to donate. I will post the link in the show notes. And that's the devastating murder of the beloved daughter, sister, and mother, Christina Ann Thompson Harris. And honestly, like, the statistics of women dying, like 34% of women killed in the United States in 2021 died at the hands of an intimate partner. Like, this happens way more than it should. Like, the person that you decide to share the rest of your life with should not be the one that's taking your life away. It's just sad, honestly. Like, you can't trust. It's just sad when you can't trust your own husband. Like, he poisoned her cereal. They had an 8-month-old baby, and it makes me sad because that baby's going to grow up and never really have a memory of his mom. Like, that's awful to me. I really think that it's also really interesting that breast milk was used in this case to basically reopen an investigation, because if she was a drug user, it definitely would have showed up in her breast milk long before the day she died. So I think that that's really cool. It's like another one of those things, like the familia DNA that they can use from, like, the ancestry DNA or 23andMe, in order to solve the murder. I think it's really sick that he moved on so fast. I just feel for their kids. That's what mostly stands out to me, is the kids are going to grow up without a mom or a dad now, because he couldn't just, you know, file for divorce instead of killing her. He just had, I don't know. It's just frustrating to me that there's people like that out in this world. But nevertheless, there are. So it's just good to spread awareness. I mean, watch for the red flag signs in your relationship. If, you know, if it doesn't feel right, you know, reach out to somebody. I don't know. I mean, nobody could ever really predict this to happen. You never really expect your spouse to be the one to end your life. It's really heartbreaking, honestly. But at this point, we are going to, I should say I am, there's no we here, it's just me. I'm going to shift us over to Curtis's Conspiracy Corner. And this is definitely not a Curtis conspiracy, although he probably is going to laugh. So today, for the conspiracy talk, I'm going to go into The Simpsons, the little cartoon animated show on Fox, The Simpsons. So I'm just going to, like, I know The Simpsons predict, like, everything, all the crazy things that happen. Yep, The Simpsons probably had an episode about it. Yeah, you've heard it. I'm sure you have. So this is 31 different times that the Fox comedy successfully predicted the future. Okay. So we're going to start with the first one is the Donald Trump presidency. This was predicted in season 11, episode 17, when it was Bart to the future. It was just like funny at first. And then the crazy part is that they actually got the year correct as well. They correctly predicted the Super Bowl in season 3, episode 14, Lisa the Greek. And this was when Lisa correctly predicted that the Washington Redskins would win. And then they did. And so that was kind of crazy. I don't know anything about football, so I'm not even going to pretend like I knew that that happened in The Simpsons. Another prediction was that Disney would be buying out 20th Century Fox. And this was predicted in season 10, episode 5, When You Dish Upon a Star. Which is kind of crazy because Disney's just buying everything up. I mean, they bought up like Marvel and stuff like that too. So it's just kind of crazy how big Disney is getting. The underwater submersible emergency situation that just recently happened earlier this year was predicted in season 17, episode 10, Homer's Paternity Coup. Which I've never watched The Simpsons, so I have no idea like about any of these characters or like what actually happens. But this actually was crazy because it was, let's see. I'm sorry, I'm trying to read my notes here. They in the episode, they embark on an underwater adventure and try to find a sunken ship. And that's exactly what happened with the submersible Ocean Gate just earlier this year in June. Smartwatches. In episode 6, season 6, episode 19, Lisa's Wedding. Lisa's Wedding, it was like a technology joke about having a smartwatch. And then in 2013, smartwatches with voice recognition came out. So that's kind of crazy. Autocorrect was from season 6, episode 8, Lisa on Ice. This is one of the few cases where The Simpsons not only made a prediction, but actively contributed to the events. So, and like some of these things, like, you have to like think too, like if they happen in a TV show, they can be recreated. The only things that really can't be recreated would be like weather events or something crazy like that. Or like, I don't know. I think that the president one was kind of crazy too, but like if it's said it's going to happen, then there's always a chance for the future to be like altered for that to happen. Stealing cooking grease for cash, season 10, episode 1, Lard of the Dance. It was one of Homer's get rich quick schemes. And it was reported that thieves were stealing grease from restaurants around New York City to produce, to sell to producers of biodiesel. The FIFA's corruption scandal and World Cup results, season 25, episode 16, You Don't Have to Live Like a Referee. The Simpsons' take on the World Cup involves Homer being brought into the world of refereeing, mainly due to the FIFA organization having a shortage from massive corruption. He gets the temptation and he decides to call the big game fairly, leading Germany winning the World Cup. First, Germany did not end up winning the title that same year, but what followed in 2015 was not as joyous, as the FIFA headquarters was raided by police and accusations of bribery, fraud, and money laundering. So it was a little bit of a twist, but kind of similar. The Beatles sending belated mail fan mail, season two, episode 19 or 18, I'm sorry, Brush with Greatness. She had Marge Simpson had sent her celebrity crush a painting, and after decades pass, the star finally sends back a response. In 2013, two women from Essex re received a pl reply from Paul McCartney after sending him a mixtape 50 years prior. So, I mean, they're like little things that, like, I guess could just happen. I'm not really sure if we could actually truly call them predictions. Let's see. Video chats, season six, episode 19, Lisa's wedding. They predicted video chats, which became really huge in like 2020 during the pandemic. Like everything was going on Zoom and Skype and Google Hangouts and FaceTime. This is one prediction that the writers had to see to believe. The US wins gold in curling, season 21, episodes 12, Boy Meets Curl. One of the show's many international trips, Homer and Marge get drafted into the US curling team. Despite the odds against them, they're able to sweep Sweden and win the gold medal. It took 8 years before it reached the target in 2018 Winter Olympics. Pyeongchang featured the same matchup and result. An Average Joe Goes into Space, season 5, episode 15. And as you guys know, people are just going to space now. Like, if you have the money, you can just go to space now. So that's something that was predicted by The Simpsons. Which kind of just seems like unrealistic and futuristic. The next one is Lady Gaga's Super Bowl performance, season 23, episode 22, Lisa Goes Gaga, where Lisa dresses up like Lady Gaga. And then in 2017, Lady Gaga truly did perform at the Super Bowl halftime show in a similar choreography, dance, similar outfits, which obviously could have been done just to match up with the show, just for something, interesting. Covering up Michelangelo's David, season two, episode nine, Itchy and Scratchy and Marge. In an earlier episode, Marge attempted to get hyper-violent cartoon painting, pairing Itchy and Scratchy to be more docile. She realized how censorship would cut both ways when the town tried to protest the nudity of Michelangelo's David, sorry, I lost my place. Which made a stop in Springfield on a coast-to-coast tour, but the state of David also became a hot-button issue in 2016 when Russians voted on whether or not to cover a copy of the famed statue with clothes. Luckily, it did not lead them to question the material from their own beloved cartoon, Worker and Parasite. Faulty Voter Machine, Season 20, Episode 4, Treehouse of Horror. So this actually is interesting because every election, I always hear that, like, oh, there was like voter fraud, or like, oh, there was this, or there was that. So at the last one, I heard that the machines didn't truly count the vote. So, I mean, you can take that with whatever. It's just interesting how they had predicted it. Mutant Tomatoes, season 11, episode 5. Homer's attempt at farming led him to produce a tomaco, which is a tomato tobacco hybrid, utilizing some nuclear materials from his day job at the plant. In 2013, a satire mutated into reality. Fruits and vegetables near the nuclear power plant turned into hybridized horrors. The Higgs and Boson Particle, episode 10, ep or I'm sorry, season 10, episode 2, The Wizard of Evergreen Terrace. Inspired by the work of Thomas Edison, Homer becomes an aspirational inventor in the show's 10th season. The cutaway gag involves Homer scribbling profusely on a chalkboard, the bottom of which shows a math equation. More than a decade later, scientists discovered the Higgs-Boson particle, also known as the quote-unquote God particle, startled to find it was its mass was similar to Homer's calculation, which that to me is that's weird. The Albuquerque Isotope, season 12, episode 15, Hungry, Hungry Homer. This is less of a prediction, but more of a show inspiring real life event. So that's not really a prediction. The Ebola outbreak in season 9, episode 3, I think we can all remember in 2014 and 15 when Ebola did break out again, which was terrifying. Like, that's, oh, that sounds so scary to me. The Shard in season 6, episode 19, Lisa's Wedding. This is too eerie to be a coincidence type prediction. The episodes featured an establishing shot of Big Ben with the joke thrown in of it now having a digital face. But if you look at the left-hand side, you'll see a pointed spire that doesn't seem to fit in with the real London sky. Construction of the Shard completed in 2012, and the skyscraper not only has a similar shape to the mysterious building, but it also sits in the same place comparison to Big Ben. So that's something interesting. Let's see. I'm only going to read a couple more of these because at this point, like, I just don't know anything about The Simpsons. So I truly hope you guys are enjoying this. I really don't know a lot about them. Selling ferrets as toy poodles. Obviously, ferrets are like the new thing to have as a pet. And that happened in season 13, episode 22. But that was like a thing like a while ago. Like, I remember kids in high school had them. The three-eyed fish in season 2, episode 4. There was just a three-eyed wolffish caught in 2011 near another nuclear plant, which is just creepy. Like, all the nuclear things that like cause changes and you know, malfunctions in the DNA and things like that. So the next one is putting horse meat in food, season 5, episode 19, Sweet Seymour Skinner's Badass Song. A quick visual in the fifth season shows a lunch lady, Doris, adding horse parts to a typical Springfield elementary lunch. In 2013, health officials discovered that several beef products contained horse meat, which is just kind of gross, honestly. I can't imagine that horse meat would actually even taste good because they're not very, I don't know. They just don't look, I don't know. Maybe they're just too, like, domesticated, I guess. I'm not sure. Suing an all-you-can-eat restaurant, season 4, episode 8. This legal theory was tested in courts in 2012 and 2017. Ironically, it even happened in Springfield, Massachusetts, that he gets kicked out of a seafood restaurant after pursuing an all-you-can-eat deal to sue for false advertising. So that's kind of funny. Baby Translator, season 3, episode 24, Brother, Can You Spare Two Dimes? The Simpsons, hold on, were on an app game back in the early 1990s. Let's see. Years later, the Cry Translator app would come out, which analyzes a baby's cry to translate the needs. That's kind of cool, actually. That just, like, is taking an idea and making it functional. Guys, there's a ton more on here. I'm only going to read, like, two more. So the Donut-Shaped Universe was season 10, episode 22, which celebrated cosmologist Stephen Hawking, and he made his first appearance on The Simpsons. The writers couldn't resist the opportunity to put the world's smartest man and the world's stupidest man in one room. Sharing discourse over beers at Moe's Tavern, Hawking says, "Your theory of a donut-shaped universe is very intriguing. I may have to steal it. Though there had been a genuine theory that the universe is shaped like a donut or a torus since the 80s, it has resurged in popularity in the new millennium." NSA spy scandal, and this was in The Simpsons movie in 2007, when Marge discussed her plan to out government secrets, were taken to the headquarters of National Security Agency. Inside, there's a room full of monitors, a whole staff listening to phone calls in the hopes of catching America's most wanted. It was almost as if the real NSA were listening in on the film. In 2013, Edward Snowden revealed to the public numerous secret surveillance programs that the agency was operating, which we talked about Snowden before. I know we did. Maybe in one of our earlier episodes. So that's just interesting. So that was painful for me to do the conspiracy corner, but you know, it is what it is. I didn't want to skip out on it. But that's it. That's all I got for you guys this week. Gonna keep it short and sweet. My sister's getting married this weekend, so we had and Curtis is working like crazy this weekend, so we've got lots going on. So this is the only time really we could get the recording done, and he just had to miss it because unfortunately he's at work right now. So I guess that's it. If you would not mind, it would help us out a lot if you could give us a 5-star review on whatever platform you're listening to. We still want people to send in stories. We've gotten a few so far. We're just trying to collect a few on the podcast to read as like a listener's episode. And you can send those in at partnersincrimethepodcast@gmail.com. And you can follow us on Instagram, which I regained access to. And I guess that's it. I guess that's it. So thanks for listening. Thanks for coming back. And I guess we'll see you guys next week. Have a good one. See you later. Goodbye.